And with that introduction, we look to Brother Ken to give us the class on spiritual courtship.
Thank you, Brother Dan. We're going to take 1 minute and finish up what we didn't finish in the last class. I sat down without having mentioned two things I should have mentioned. One is the value of apologies. I hope no one walked away from the class earlier this evening and thought apologies aren't necessary. Apologies are very, very helpful in promoting forgiveness. In fact, I apologize to Jessica and to Sarah for inappropriately, potentially embarrassing them at the end of the class. So I shouldn't have done that. I was out of place to do that. But don't overlook the value of apologies. Secondly, we won't turn back to Matthew 18. We read it yesterday in the readings and tonight. Remember that parable of the unforgiving creditor? The 10,000 talents and the 100 pence? What that tells me is when you sin against me and I'm feeling very angry about it all, I have to remember that God values that sin as $10. All of my sins that I commit against God, He values at $10 million. Do the math on the value of a talent. It may even be more than $10 million today, but that's the size of the disparity. You see, we tend to maximize the sins of others against us. That's not how God looks at it. And we minimize the sins that we commit against God. God says we have our maximization and our minimization upside down. And that's powerful because when someone then sins against me, all I have to do is remember I am so, so thankful that God forgives the enormity of my sins. How can I not forgive my brother or sister who may sin against me? Okay, so that is the end of the previous session. Does everybody have a piece of paper? You're going to need a piece of paper and a pencil. You're not going to turn this in if anybody doesn't have a piece of paper. I've got some here. First thing I'm going to have you do is becoming the unofficial steward for the moment. Thank you. Just raise your hand. I don't have any of the pencils, sorry. Hopefully a neighbor does. We're going to draw some lines on a paper because we are going to depict three aspects of a relationship. So, turn your paper sideways, however you like. And the first line you're going to draw at the very top of your page starts on the far left-hand side of the page and goes all the way across the right-hand side of the page till it goes off the edge of the paper. Everybody got that? So it's going to start here and it's going to go all the way across. If you got your paper like this, it's going to start here and go all the way across. We call that the spiritual aspect of a relationship. Now, what do you think are the components of a spiritual aspect, the spiritual aspect of a relationship? These are the things, thanks, Ruben, that have to do with respecting God, His Word, His character, His principles. Again, we're talking about a relationship between a young man and a young woman. So that first arrow goes all the way across the page. When the relationship has a spiritual dimension, God and godly things play a key role in the relationship. The Bible and what it teaches is important in the relationship because it's important to both people in the relationship. Relationship is founded on godly principles, and both people conduct themselves accordingly. When the spiritual component or the spiritual aspect is present, both people will grow spiritually and be spiritually edified by the relationship. So in this relationship together, a young man and a young woman have this spiritual component, and the spiritual component has all to do with God and His character and His principles and His Word. And as a result of their relationship, their individual characters, the spiritual dimension of their character, grows and benefits from the relationship. Fast forward to marriage. And the two relationships in a marriage will find there is a spiritual synergy. Aunt Diane and I today, to God's glory, are better disciples today than we were when we got married. 2012 minus 1977. See, I know both dates. But we are. And it's in God's wisdom. He took a young man named Ken Stiles and a young woman named Diane Jackson, who had both put God first in their life, and he put them together. And the result of that relationship is both disciples are better disciples today than they would have been without each other. Not to their glory, to God's glory. There's great wisdom in putting two people together in a relationship. That's why marriage is such a wonderful phenomenon. Aunt Diane has done a couple of things for me in terms of the big picture. Ruth is back there saying, just a couple? Boy, you're in trouble tonight, Bill. She has encouraged me in times of despair. And I had another disciple of Christ right next to me during those years of marriage. Very, very helpful to have another disciple right next to you that can encourage you and sustain you and remind you that the kingdom is coming. We've got to get prepared for the kingdom. And has held me accountable for the sins that I otherwise would not have wanted to hold myself accountable. Very helpful to have another disciple right there next to you that can see all the good and the bad and the unmentionable. Very helpful, very wise on God's part. That's the spiritual component of the relationship. Any questions on what that part looks like? That peace can and should exist in a relationship between a young man and a young woman who are courting. Next, move down an inch or so on your paper and draw another line that goes about halfway across the page. This one marked the emotional aspect of the relationship. This one is about feelings of caring and compassion. This is where you can write the pitter-patter of the heart, because that's where this one takes place. The two individuals like to be around each other. Being together is important to both people. They share time together, they do things together, they spend time just talking with each other. There's a desire to get to know the other person in much greater detail than in a casual relationship. What is important to one person all of a sudden becomes very important to the other person. I have seen young ladies eat French fries dipped in maple syrup because they were interested in advancing the emotional relationship. We have a young sister in Detroit, didn't end up marrying this young fella. She bought cases of a pop called Berners. I don't think you can get it out here. It's a ginger ale made in Detroit. Bought cases of it, had never drunk a drop of it before this young fella came into her life, but he liked Berners, and all of a sudden, so did she. Because she was interested in getting to know the other person, and what was important to him became important to her. They enjoy finding common interests, they tend to overlook each other's faults, and they become very sensitive and they're not hurting each other's feelings. Now I want you to draw a third line. So is everybody clear on the emotional aspect of the relationship? Now draw a third line that comes across about a centimeter. And that is the physical aspect of the relationship. I would suggest that line be very short until marriage because of the dangers that the world now impresses upon us and because of our own natural lusts. When we're talking about the physical aspect of a relationship, young ladies understand you are dealing with a power that you don't understand. That's what you need to understand. Hebrews 13, verse 4 says that the marriage bed should be undefiled. In fact, let's have a look. Hebrews 13, verse 4. Paul warns, reading from the RSV, let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled, for God will judge the immoral and adulterous. Premarital sexual relationships and any actions associated with it are strictly forbidden in Scripture. This aspect of the relationship is not intended to occur until after the spiritual and the emotional aspects have well developed. Now, the physical attraction to the opposite sex is not an ungodly feeling. God has made us this way. It's in His wisdom that we have these feelings, that we have these lusts. But it's not intended that these dominate the overall relationship. They have to be subject to godly principles. And it's the godly principles that ought to govern the conduct between a young man and a young woman. If this part of the relationship is allowed to dominate the relationship, it will inevitably lead to sin. Society used to reflect these principles. If you had gone back 100 years, this could have been a congregation of the Anglican Church, I suppose. And they would have agreed with these three lines. It's all now been turned upside down. The churches don't know where to stand on it. They don't want to lose people, so they support all kinds of things. You can't turn to the churches. In many cases, you certainly can't turn to society. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 9, another verse worth recognizing. You see, society used to teach abstinence. When I was your age, abstinence was the principal word that governed relationships. Today, it's protection because of the changing morals in the world that we live. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 9 speaks to the strength of the physical attraction between a young man and a young woman. But if they cannot exercise self-control, the New King James Version says, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. And the warning to those who are courting but not yet married is don't put yourselves in situations in which your passions will become inflamed. We could take the time and go back and look at Bible characters who followed the wisdom of these three lines. And there are some. Isaac and Rebekah, Boaz and Ruth. And there are some who didn't follow those three lines. Samson and Esau and Solomon. And the young men of Noah's day who saw the sons of God who saw the daughters of men. The same type of day that the Lord Jesus Christ said would exist at the time of His return. How the three lines are interrelated and connected is significant. The spiritual line must outpace the emotional and the physical. And the emotional line must outpace the physical. And by outpace, we mean develop sooner, be stronger, and given a greater importance. Now this is where you get to do a little work. Open your Bible to Ephesians 5. Around about verse 21, just so you don't think Uncle Ken has made all this up, take a look in Ephesians 5, beginning at verse 21, and find the three components, the spiritual, the emotional, and the physical. So if you find any of the three, please indicate to the rest of us. I know they're there. They're there every time I look.
You got a spiritual in verse 26.
All right, so we have one vote up here for the spiritual in verse 26. And what phrase indicated to you that we're talking about the spiritual?
The washing of the water by the word.
Everybody see that? That is not an emotional aspect of a relationship. That's not a physical aspect of a relationship. That's a spiritual component of the relationship, where the husband is responsible for washing his wife with the water of the word. Now, before we go any further, let's make sure we're all in agreement. Ephesians 5 is talking about the principles that ought to govern a relationship between a husband and a wife, modeled after, as we've seen allegorically, the relationship between Christ and his bride. Should a young couple wait until the day they're married to begin to follow these principles? No. Should they wait till the day they're engaged to follow these principles? No. These principles ought to be at the foundation of their relationship at the moment their relationship begins. Now, that's tough to pinpoint sometimes. You ask the young lady, when did your relationship begin? She'll give you a different date than when the young man did. But you see the importance of these principles coming to bear at the very beginning of the relationship. At the very beginning, young ladies, that young man ought to be interested in washing you in the water of the word. And that doesn't mean as his wife. That just means the spiritual component is very important to him. And it's very important to him that the principles of the word are part of your relationship. What's another aspect of the spiritual component here in Ephesians 5? There's three or four more. Not having spot or wrinkle. Is that part of the emotional? No. Part of the physical? No. So his concern is that she be presented before Christ without spot or wrinkle. Clearly concerned about her spiritual well-being. There's another one. What's another one? He ought to be acting as in the role of Christ in doing all he can to save his bride, even to the laying down of his life, which means he is crucifying his flesh and his lusts in order to make sure the young lady is spiritually edified. He's not looking to satisfy those lusts. What's another one? Some other words in these verses. You're in the right verses. 25, 26, 27. What else is he to do? Sorry? Sanctify, which means to separate, to keep her holy, to set her apart, to protect her from those unholy influences. So we have sanctify, we have cleanse her with the washing of the word, to help her become holy and without blemish, to treat her as Christ treats the ecclesia. And you notice the responsibility for this situation in the relationship falls upon the young men. It's true in a marriage relationship, it's true in a courting relationship. Put the spiritual aspect first. If you are currently in a relationship where these lines are upside down, where the physical is happening first and the spiritual is trailing behind, you are already in trouble. Already in trouble. And what you need to do is determine tonight that those three lines need to line up the way God intends in a relationship. Let's continue on. Let's look for the emotional aspects. Where in verses 21 to 33 do we have the emotional aspects? What are the words? Come on, ladies. What do you look for a fella to do for you in a relationship? Love?
Nourish
and cherish. Are these not the emotional aspect of a relationship? To care for a person, to nourish them, to cherish them, to value them. That's what the husband is supposed to do for the wife. That is what the young man, that's how he should be treating the young lady. These are characteristics of the emotional aspect of the relationship. Now, that doesn't mean that you suspend the spiritual part of the relationship and then begin the emotional part. These are happening simultaneously. In fact, the emotional aspect is built upon the spiritual foundation. The two are interrelated. But the feelings of care and compassion and wanting to get to know each other, they're rooted in a joint commitment to serve God. They don't exist apart from the spiritual aspect of the relationship. Now, which of the three, sorry, we've got one more to do. Where's the physical aspect of the relationship? That's right, joined to his wife and the two shall become one. So Paul has the three pieces. And purposely the spiritual component is put first. It's there in verse 31. Now, understanding human nature is helpful. Which of those three, naturally, do you think are the most important to women? Naturally, not spiritually, naturally. Which of those three do you think are most naturally important to young men? Do you think Hollywood understands this? If they're making a movie to appeal to young women, you see why there are long, long walks in the park with the rain gently falling. And he's gazing into her eyes. She's gazing into his eyes. But if we're going to appeal to the young men, haha, we're going to have a different plot, different scene altogether. Because they play upon these emotions, and they know exactly what is appealing to young men and young women. And that's why it's important for us to keep these in perspective. Without putting God first, young ladies will focus on the emotional aspect, and the young men on the physical aspect. And imagine a relationship with either aspect being emphasized and there's no God in the relationship. Take either line number 2 or line number 3. If God is not there, or if he's minimized, if he only comes a centimeter across the page, sin is inevitable. Special warning to the young ladies. Sorry, fellas, but I am partial to the young ladies. If you're either currently courting someone outside the truth or considering it, a young man who does not have a fear or a love of God in his life, there is no way he's going to live up to those principles of Ephesians 5. Absolutely no way. What will be the inevitable outcome in a relationship between a young man and a young woman, if the young man does not have a spiritual component in the relationship? There's only 2 possible outcomes. What are they? No spiritual line in the relationship, or one that's so small you can hardly see it. There's only 2 possible outcomes for that young lady who has now emotionally given her heart to this young man. She's either going to end up with a broken heart because she's going to have to end the relationship, or she's going to find herself standing next to this young man at a wedding altar outside the truth and facing now a life of a partner who will not stand next to her and encourage her to persevere in her discipleship, who will not stand next to her and hold her accountable for sin, because neither of those 2 pieces will be important to him. He will be living by a completely different set of guidelines, different set of standards, different set of expectations. Two stories I wanted to share with you. Real life stories. I can't tell you the names because it would not be appropriate. There was a young brother in Canada, back east. He had little access to available sisters. He fell in love with a young lady. Knew she had to be baptized. He taught her the truth. Eventually, she was baptized. She became a member of one of the Toronto Ecclesias. They became engaged, set a wedding date, but he didn't have a good feeling about the relationship. He was concerned that she was making a commitment to him and not to God. So he told her one day that they ought to wait and give the relationship more time so that she could deepen her love for God. She never came back to meeting on Sunday at that ecclesia. Walked out of his life. Broke his heart. But in God's grace, within 2 years, again having little access to young sisters, a young sister came into his life. They now live in South America and are raising a family. But it was a very difficult time for a period of time in his life because he came to realize that it was not appropriate what he was doing. Second story, young couple further east. She was going to university away from home in the truth. In a town that had an ecclesia. He was also going to university, and they had fallen in love. She was receiving counsel from her family and her ecclesia that this fella has not put God first in his life. She heard the counsel and she disregarded it. But the day came when she finally told him, "I cannot go any further with you because the truth is more important to me than this relationship." She finished her schooling and she moved back home. And he was out of her life. Or so she thought. He was so dumbfounded by her insistence upon the truth that in that same city where he lived, he started attending meetings and Bible class. And he eventually learned the truth. They now have 2 children. Tomorrow morning, God willing, they are packing up their trailer and they're heading to the Manitoulin Kids Camp that starts on Saturday. But she took a stand in her life and said, "I'm not going to go any further without this young man making a commitment to put God first in his life. And she took that stand to God's glory. In both cases, there were lots of tears. But in both cases, there was also lots of faith. I can't stand before you tonight and guarantee everything will always work out, but I can guarantee that if you are willing to devote yourself to upholding godly principles, that he will work in your life and bless that situation. He will. We have to trust him. We have to trust him. In answer to the question, is it okay to date a person outside the truth? It's not even okay to date a person inside the truth. I don't really like the word date, but I think everybody understands what it means. I wouldn't suggest you court someone inside the truth unless their spiritual line is very strong. We're not talking 6 point here or 8 point or 10 point. We're talking like 36 point, you know, nice and strong and bold, where they have put God first in their life so that when they come to the relationship, if you have a bold line that goes across the page in terms of your own life, God can bless that relationship. You know, you ask yourself, is this the right person? Does the person encourage your discipleship? Go slow in your relationship. Find someone who has put God first in their life, and even then you're not sure. Go slow, spend time, and see if the spiritual aspect of the relationship is being developed. The question I encourage all young people to ask themselves, are you a better disciple today in your relationship with this young person than you were 6 months ago? Not to your honor and glory. Do they encourage you to study the Bible? Do you enjoy talking about the readings? Do you enjoy going to gatherings? Do you enjoy exchanging points that you have learned from Scripture? You know, do they encourage you to pray? Do they encourage you to act in a godly way? All of these things. In God's wisdom, if you find someone who encourages you that in that dimension, that's the wisdom of marriage, to find someone who can be helpful to you in that respect. And it's really a wonderful thing when it works out. But this is why Paul says we are to marry only in the Lord, because there is no way we can find somebody outside the truth that will have the level of devotion and commitment to things spiritual who has not first made a commitment to honor God in their life. You can use the diagram to identify two things. You know, the spiritual, a respect for the spiritual, the emotional, and the physical in that order and in that dimension. You can use it to identify two things. Number one, who you're going to attract in a relationship. And secondly, who you're going to find attractive. So if the spiritual component in a relationship is important to you, others will know. And you will attract others who also have a similar respect or a similar regard. If the emotional piece of the relationship is the most important for you, you will attract those who share that perspective. And you may go on long walks with that person who has the emotional as the strongest component. And you may feel a very strong bond of connection. You can talk to them like unlike you've been able to talk to anybody else. But if it's all just the emotional connection without the spiritual, you are headed for danger. And if the physical component is the most important, you will be attractive and attract those who share a similar perspective. And it will impact how you dress, it will impact how you comport yourself, it will impact how you interact with others. So it's very critical that we get these three pieces in the right perspective. Hopefully, once we appreciate the role of courting, which really is to strengthen the spiritual aspect of the relationship first and foremost, while also then the emotional piece is trailing, important but trailing, and the physical piece is far, far behind. Hopefully, if we can see the value of how such a relationship should develop, then we can see what should happen in a courting relationship. There ought to be activities, there ought to be conversations that are strengthening the spiritual peace. So that doing the readings together, doing the Bible study, doing youth book work conferences, that's always good. All of those things, visiting senior members, doing housework for those in the ecclesia who are elderly, those things that can strengthen the spiritual component are the kinds of activities that ought to take place in the relationship. Stay away from those aspects that strengthen the physical aspect. There is no way a young couple who are going out on a date to watch a movie that glorifies the flesh and excites the lust of the young man, there is no way the spiritual component of that relationship can be strengthened. Doesn't matter how interested he is in going there. Don't go down that path, young ladies. Don't go down that path, because all you're doing is succumbing to a path that will end up with a sad outcome. Okay, I think we'll finish up with one last activity. Hopefully by now you have the gist of the three lines. You can see scripturally where they are identified. There are other places other than Ephesians 5 where you can find these, but we're going to ask you for the last 5 minutes to work in groups of 3, 4, or 5. Would strongly recommend you try to do this in a group setting, but will not insist. Go back through the events of Ruth 3 and look for the evidence that both care deeply for each other. Look for the evidence that their priorities were proper regarding the three aspects of the godly relationship. They had the spiritual and the emotional and the physical in the right perspective. Number three, how did what each person value impact how they were attracted to? How did what each person valued impact how they were attracted to a person who shared the same values? How did this impact the type of person they found attractive? Where is the evidence they committed their relationship to faith? And where is the evidence that Boaz, as the fella in the relationship, took spiritual responsibility for the relationship? So we have now 4.5 minutes I will let you disperse into groups as you best see fit. Anybody have any trouble with any of the five questions? Yes. Yeah, even as I was reading it, I was stumbling over it. Hopefully you can appreciate Ruth valued a spiritual man. Boaz valued a spiritual woman. Why was it inappropriate for Boaz to find Ruth an attractive spiritual young woman? Why was it inappropriate for Boaz, in the eyes of the other Israelites, to find Ruth an attractive spiritual young woman? Because she's a Moabite. Sorry? No, the answer is, if you go back to chapter 2, he saw her faith in the same realm of Abraham. She had left father and mother. But he valued the spiritual character of Ruth. Who didn't value the spiritual character of Ruth? The nearest kinsman. He wanted the land, but not Ruth. So yeah, number 3 could be reworded. But hopefully you can see Boaz is a very spiritual man. You know, he was a man of valor, was it? A man of, can't remember in chapter 2. And we just read how Ruth was a woman of virtue. So anyways, we're at the time. If anybody has a question afterwards, come see me. But hopefully you can see this is a highly, highly charged emotional and physical situation. Under the law of Moses, was it appropriate for Ruth to come and offer herself physically to Boaz? And the answer is yes, if he's the nearest kinsman. But he isn't. And because he isn't, they both have to back away from the relationship, submit it to God or commit it to God by faith. And if it doesn't work out, their relationship will go no further. But you notice, young man, who took the lead in this? Young woman comes to you in the middle of the night and offers herself. And Boaz says, God's principles will come first in this relationship. Highly commendable in terms of providing guidance for us today. Sorry to go a couple minutes over. And Brother Dan has a...